We're going to be in Mark chapter 8. 5,000 Jewish people were fed in the middle of the wilderness. 4,000 Gentile people were fed in the wilderness. That's not bad. Somebody does that, people are going to start thinking, you know, is something going on here? Well, that's where we've been the last few weeks. And Jesus is... He travels back across the lake at this point, and he's back in Jewish territory. The Pharisees come out to meet him. And they're coming, and they're wanting to argue with Jesus. And they know something's going on with Jesus. They've seen the signs. They've heard him preach. They know something's going on. So let's look at the text. Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 11. The Pharisees came out and began to argue with Jesus, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. Sighing deeply in his spirit, Jesus said, "Why does this generation seek for a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation." Leaving them, he again embarked and went away to the other side. It says that the Pharisees came out to argue with Jesus. What do you suppose they were arguing about? I suppose there could be hundreds of things that they would have argued with Jesus about. But I suspect the thing that they're arguing about here is about this deep division between Jew and Gentile. Jesus has been over in the Gentile area teaching and bringing bread from heaven and all of that stuff. And they're not very happy about it. It's got them all riled up. I'm sure that's one of the things that they're discussing. The argument kind of drones on for a bit, and then something happens. It's a little bit like when your kids are in the other room, and they're kind of arguing, and you hear the argument kind of roar up, and you're just ignoring it, of course. You're a good parent. You just let this roar up a little bit until finally one voice comes to the top, and you've got to do something about it. Well, this argument is kind of droning on with the Pharisees, and all of a sudden, somebody says, "Give us a sign from heaven. We want to know that you are who you say you are." They want a sign from heaven, from God. They want more. You know, they've seen all of the things that Jesus has done. You know, he's fed 5,000 people, 5,000 of Israel. He's fed 4,000 Gentiles. But now they say, "Give us a sign. We've seen those things. Now we want a really, 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 really good sign. You know, we want something better, something to prove who you are." But you know what? It's not just anybody asking Jesus for a sign. It's the Pharisees that are asking Jesus for a sign. And they know who they ought to know. I mean, they know the scriptures, and you know, they've seen the things that Jesus has done. They've heard the teachings that he's taught. They ought to know what's going on here. They know these signs. But the truth is that signs are not really what they're after. Mark tells us they came to test Jesus. That's the reason that they showed up. They really didn't want to know if Jesus was from God. They wanted to test him. They wanted to trip him up. They wanted to lead him out a little bit so they could make him fail. They wanted to trap him. They didn't really want Jesus to give them a sign. They knew what they knew. They knew all their doctrines. They knew all of that stuff. And they didn't need somebody coming and messing it up. They didn't need somebody to kind of upset their apple cart, because they had their religion all figured out, and their religion had everything into nice, neat compartments. Everything was in a nice, neat category. They knew what to do and what not to do. And they knew how to do whatever they wanted and make it look like it was supposed to. And they knew who was in and who was out, and they were in. You know, they knew that stuff. I think that we're all, at heart, narcissists. We all like to look in a mirror and just kind of look at our own reflection. You know, we love mirrors. We like the look of our own face. We like the sound of our own voice. You know, we like the feel of our own skin. We love mirrors. And so when we sit around and talk about the things that we're all involved in, whatever it is that we're involved in, that's the best, right? Somebody in your family dies. Family all gathers together. Their kids say, "Oh, she was the best mom ever," right? "Oh, she was beautiful. When she worked at the grocery store, she was the best grocery store manager on the planet." Why? Well, just because she was our mom. Or when you buy something, it's always the best, right? I mean, just talk to anybody who uses an Android. They're certain that that's the best thing in the world. They love those things. And yet everybody knows it's second rate to an iPhone, right? Everybody knows that. But because they bought it and it's theirs, they're, "Look at that. Isn't that Android beautiful?" When we have kids can't do anything wrong, right? Not our kids. I mean, if you got a bunch of kids doing some, making trouble, you take one of those kids out, take them to that mama bear of theirs, and you tell them that what their kid was doing, and you'll find out that we know that what we have is the best. We're totally taken by our own reflection. And if anybody anywhere is critical of our reflection, or maybe they have a different reflection that they look at, it's open season on them. They, you know, we might ask them questions, you know, if they have a different theological bent or whatever about it. We might ask them questions, you know, "What are you thinking there?" But we don't really want an answer. We just want to ask them the questions. We just want to say, "Hey, give us a sign." Well, it's not just the religious crowd that does that. Politicians. You think, we've just come through kind of a really long period where the politicians are all wrangling and trying to figure out the debt stuff and all of that. And they'll get up and they'll make speeches and they'll say, "I want proof of this." Gosh, I just spit all over the place. That's why nobody's sitting there. "I want proof of this." And somebody will offer up proof, and they're like, "Okay." And then they go on, and they want something more. Because really, they didn't care about that. Great example of that is the whole birther thing. And I don't know where you all are. You might be crazed birthers or whatever. But people are saying, "We want to see President Obama's birth certificate." And then he brings it out, and they're like, "Oh, okay, well, let's go talk about something else." And it's because they didn't really care about that. It didn't really matter. All they wanted was something to stir things up. They didn't care. They weren't listening. If I get in a discussion with some crazed Android person, and I say, "Hey, look, you give me one reason why your Android is better than this iPhone," and they might start to talk, but I don't really care what they have to say because I'm not listening. Not one word. "Hey, you know what? You can get skins for these. I'm telling you. But I'm not up for the discussion. I don't really care what color your phone is. I don't care what your carrier is. I don't care how you can hack it. I don't care anything about it because the truth is, my mind is completely closed on this issue. And I'm not listening because I have all the answers and I have an iPhone and I don't want anybody to confuse me with the facts, okay?" But you know what? When that happens in religious circles, watch out. That's dangerous. You know, you drop into a Sunday school class in any church in this country and listen to them talk about their pet doctrines, and you'll see what I mean. You drop into a Sunday school class, and they're talking about natural depravity. And you would think, by how they're talking about it, that natural depravity is the main thing that the Bible teaches. And you would think that it's as important as the birth of Jesus. And they're all just talking about it like this is everything. And and every lesson that they do somehow circles around and talks about that. Eternal security. You go to some church that eternal security is part of the point. And every single lesson somehow will circle around to talk about how you can never lose your salvation. You have eternal security. Or go to some churches and you go into the Sunday school class, and no matter what they're doing, whatever passage they're reading, that will somehow twist around to be talking about baptism, about how it's this method and not that method, or it's at this point in your salvation and not that point. No matter what, they'll figure out a way, or they'll talk about 10 commandments as if they'll talk about about speaking in tongues as if it's one of the 10 commandments, you know, that you must do that, or frequency of the Lord's Supper. They'll say, oh, you know what, it's right here. If you can't see it, it's in the Bible. And really, what's happening, you know, we can go on and on, but really it's what's happening is you've got a bunch of people looking at themselves in the mirror saying, oh, yeah. Yeah, we talk about baptism because that's what we look like. And you get people in Sunday school class and they all sit around in circles and they just talk to one another. They just say the things that everybody sees. Everybody's looking at the same reflection, and they love it. You've been to those classes, right? I've been to those Sunday school classes. There's no point in trying to discuss something. There's no point in trying to talk about these denominational ideas in these Sunday school classes, because the people that you're talking to, they know the scriptures. They know all of the arguments about this. They know how they understand them. They've talked about this subject for years, and they could and they don't even need their Bible. They can close their eyes and they can sing along with the music. They know how it goes. And if you even suggest that perhaps there's another perspective on that, then immediately you are in question, and people are gonna they go into the mode, they're gonna educate you, and so they start throwing these passages of scripture at you like a machine gun, and they're talking about how can you not understand it this way? And there's no real discussion because everybody's sitting around and looking at their image and they're looking at their reflection and they're talking about it. That's it. You have no voice. It doesn't matter if you use logic. It doesn't matter if you talk about context or the Bible, or it doesn't matter if you have scholars, because nobody's listening. Nobody's listening. They're just saying, give me a sign. And at some point they may say, hey, I've got a question for you. And they think they're about to actually engage in a discussion, but really they don't care about the answer. They're really just trying to test you. They're really just trying to lead you. They're saying, give us a sign from heaven. Jesus, give us a sign. They don't really want to see it. They just want to do something else that we can dismiss. Just like we did with all of the other things. We've already explained away all those signs you've given. Give us another one. Now they're demanding another sign. They're looking into the mirror and they're admiring their own reflection. And right now they're looking at it and going, my, 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 we've got him. We've got him good. Yes, you're a fine-looking man. Oh, you know, God loves you the most. He loves Israel, not those nasty Gentiles. Yes, you. Nice hair. You know, they just look at their mirror, and that's their whole world. You know, they would be fine if Jesus wanted to join their Sunday school. They would be fine if Jesus would sit in the circle and talk about their reflection, if he would look in their mirror. But that's not who Jesus is. Jesus came to pry our faces away from the mirrors. He came to look into our eyes. He came to show us who he really was and who we really are. Look at verse 12. Sighing deeply in his spirit, Jesus said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation. Now, this verse is really, in all of our translations, is one of these kind of fixed up verses, because underneath this nice, neat English, the underlying Greek is a mess. Because it's kind of this, well, I used to read this as an angry statement. You know, they've come and they're arguing with Jesus, and Jesus says, look, no sign for you. Kind of like that, the soup Nazi of signs kind of thing. But I don't think he is. I mean, what we see in the Greek underneath is that this is not even a complete sentence. This is this kind of, it's not Jesus yelling back at the Pharisees. He's struggling for words here. It's kind of a stammering sadness. It's like whenever you're so hurt or sad that you can't quite get the words out. But as you're talking, you're saying, I feel bad and it hurts. You're saying all of these things, and if you were to write it down, it doesn't make for very good reading, but you get the gist of it. And I think Jesus is doing that. I think Jesus is, he's looking at these men who are just sitting around admiring their own reflections, and it makes them sad. I mean, this is Israel. For two millennia, God has coddled these children and raised them up and tried to make them the best. And these guys who are standing right in front of him are the Pharisees. They are the best of the best. They're the ones who've studied the word and know the stuff. And they can't stop looking at their own reflections. That's all they do. It's sad. And I think Jesus is sad. And I think he's just stammering around going, I don't know what to say. It's sad. And you see, we see churches do this very same thing. You know, we know the scriptures, and we know what we believe, and so we take that, and we're busy arguing with one another about what we believe and who's right, and they're arguing with us back, and we're saying, give us a sign, and they're throwing up a sign, and they're saying, give us a sign, and we're putting up a sign, and nobody's paying attention to anybody. Everybody's too busy cooing at their own reflection to even hear each other. We don't even realize what fools we look like. And it's just sad. And it's sad. We do that to people outside the church too. We see somebody hungry, and so we go and we talk to them about the provision of Jesus, and then we look at ourselves and we wink. We go on. Or we hear somebody talking about evolution, and we think, they can't do that. And we walk over to them and we give them a few creation science facts and we say, take that. And if you've got, you just show me one shred of evidence that you have that doesn't fit with the Bible record. And then we look at ourselves, wink, and walk off. Before they even answer, we don't care what they say. We don't want a sign. We don't care. We see somebody in sin. We go over, we quote the proper commandments and the good verses to them. We look at ourselves in the mirror and we say, hey, that's looking pretty fine right there, and walk off. Because all we care about is what's in this mirror. That's it. Now, don't you wonder how a church like Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas, can even call themselves a church? They're the ones that go and protest every funeral of a soldier and carry placards that say, God hates fags and all of that stuff. And you think, how can they possibly even call themselves a church? Well, here's how they do it. They just look at themselves in the mirror and they say, wow, I'm so nice, and everything that I think is right, and everything I think is good, and everything I think is God, and I've got it all figured out, and I don't want anybody to tell me anything different. That's how they do it. When we become so enamored with our own reflection, we are in trouble. Sighing deeply in his spirit, he said, why does this generation seek for a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. He sighs in his spirit. It's this sadness. And I think he's stammering around trying to figure out what to say. And it's like, sign? You want a sign? You really want a sign? You wouldn't believe me if you saw a sign. What do you think? I don't even know what to say. No sign is going to be given to you. And that's the best we can do of the broken Greek that's there. But the sense of it is there. It's this disjointed sadness, construction that gives you the feeling of, sign? You want a sign? That's what it says. It's horribly sad. It's because it's this generation. It's this people. It's the people standing right in front of Jesus that he came to die for. No sign will be given. Hear these words. Let them ring in your ear. Why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. You know, when I read that, I realize that I have to stop looking in the mirror. I've got to stop looking into the mirror and arguing with other people. Because, you know, the doctrines that I grew up with and I believed with all of my heart and all of that stuff that I was taught since I was a boy, some of those might be wrong. My ideas of what church should look like, they're not the only ideas out there. There might be other people out there who love Jesus as much as I do. And I've got to stop looking at my own reflection and thinking what a beautiful person I am and what a wonderful and what horrible how horrible everybody else is, because they don't look like the reflection in my mirror. And we have to start listening to one another. We have to stop looking in our mirror and marking territory long enough that we might find out there are some pretty important things out there that we don't know. And there are some things that I think are pretty important that I think I've gotten all figured out. But maybe I don't have it all figured out. But I have to stop and I have to put away the mirror and I have to stop looking at the mirror long enough that I can hear what people say. We have to do that. And we have to start listening to Jesus. You know, we say, well, of course we're going to listen to Jesus. I mean, that's what we do. We're Christians. But you know, sometimes we don't. Because Jesus challenges who we are. And he challenges the image in our mirror. And it's not very pleasant sometimes. You know, it's like this Jew-Gentile division that Jesus is challenging amongst these, with these Pharisees. You know, it was established. It was unmovable. It was a doctrine. Everybody believed in it. But they weren't listening to God, or they would have gotten rid of it a long time ago. They thought they had it figured out, so they weren't listening to Jesus. Have you ever come to a passage in Scripture that you're reading along and you think, oh, I know what that one says? Or you read it and you don't even bother to think about it because you think, I know what that means. And you know what we're doing? Looking at our reflection. We're remembering what we've always thought about it. And we're not even listening again. We're not listening to what God says. We need to hear God. And we don't demand from him, give us a sign. Instead, we have to listen. Our passage ends with something that ought to, frankly, shake us up enough that we drop our mirrors. Leaving them, he again embarked and went on his way to the other side. Jesus leaves. In the midst of their argument, they said, give us a sign. He doesn't continue the argument. He leaves. In all of our arguing with God, in all of our arrogance, in all of our gazing at our own reflection, and the saddest thing that we might ever hear Jesus say is, I'm done. And walk away. Stand. God, don't walk away. We're here. and we're listening.